C1PH. Number 7B.
Mankind hasn't. We have seen in this chapter only too often how mankind today bows down to the idols of civilization, that we fool ourselves with all sorts of theories, that we believe in man-made theories and then throw them away after a few years. If we would be in a state of full awakening, I try to find the English term for ein helles Bewusstsein, for an enlightened consciousness. Mankind isn't there. That was always the danger, that every generation, every age thought that they had the final answer, that it only needed a little bit of polishing up the whole thing in order to have the whole. And that is that which hinders progress. But if we realize to ourselves that we have not yet gained the height of transparent consciousness, of that consciousness which is fully enlightened, then if we admit that to ourselves, we are willing to change. We are willing to let the present structure of consciousness be supplanted by a higher, clearer state of consciousness. And this is, as many people today see it, is the great mutation of consciousness that takes place. That people see that today the traditional structure of consciousness, which is really formed by the rational age, by the age of logic and rationality, must give way to a much higher sense of consciousness, to that consciousness which is irrational, which is living by revelation, which is completely transparent for every new revelation. And that demands, as we have seen before, that our consciousness must change. It isn't so. You see, if we would be interested today, say we all together would be interested in another subject and say, well, let's learn something more about, what shall we say, about geology. Well, we would start studying geology. How would we start getting hold of that subject? With the same structure of consciousness which has been given to us through our education and schooling. And with that structure, we could grasp the subject. Now, we have not taken Christian Science as one of the various subjects which we can grasp in that way. We can't. We can't grasp it with the old structure of consciousness. The point is that what is needed is a new consciousness. And only with the new consciousness we can grasp the new subject, a new science, a completely new science that is just around the corner. I feel this is a very important point to realize and to be quite clear about it. Why have so many people through the last 100 years or 70 years been interested in Christian Science and dropped it? Because they didn't get hold of it with a new consciousness. They tried to reason it out with their old sense of consciousness. And then comes a time where it just doesn't make any more sense, where it doesn't work, because it can't work that way. Science can only work and does only work in its own realm, its own realm of consciousness. And so let's see that we get hold of it and take hold of it with prayer, with atonement, with marriage, with Christian Science versus spiritualism. That forms and cultures a new consciousness. Once that new consciousness is cultured and reformed, then it clicks. It coincides then with the divine mind. Then, with the Christ chapters, the divine mind is taking hold on us. Then it becomes Emmanuel, God with us. Then that Emmanuel is taking care of the human body. Then mind is really controlling the body. Then mind, an understanding of mind, is that which controls the whole universe. Then that mind is giving us the power over the universe. So this is here what she wanted to show, that disease is just a dream. Just as our mortal existence is a dream, and we think it's reality. When natural scientists and philosophers and so on talk about the material universe, they talk about reality. They don't know that they talk about a dream. But we have to see through that. Then the last stone, love, as love shows really that a mortal does not exist. Just as death does not exist, sickness does not exist, we also have to be honest enough with ourselves that that which we call a mortal does not exist as man. Well, that's the point we don't like to accept. Everything within ourselves rebels against it. We want to have the mortal and have it as a mortal and culture it as a mortal and love it as a mortal and build it up as a mortal. Why should we like to get rid of death and of sickness and why not of the mortal? There's no reason for it except that mortal mind does not want to yield voluntary. So here she gives for the first time and the only time in the whole of the textbook a description of the mortal. And she gives that description over a few pages. I have epitomized it and said, a mortal is only a mortal seeming. It's only seeming, it's not a being. That's her word. He starts from the lowest thought and returns to its native nothingness. But man, in God's likeness, is spiritual and eternal. She feels that this subject is important enough to present it again, step by step, through the seven. And I have given it through those 7 points. And it's something which we have to face. Even if we feel we are not at that point where we might be able to do it, but we have to face it and not try to close our eyes to it. How shall we be saved of the mortal if we don't try to see that the mortal is nothing? Why should we try to be saved of something which is real? We wouldn't. But innately we know that that mortal is not man. And so innately each one of us longs to be freed from the mortal. And if we consciously investigate and are clear about the whole concept of mortal, I think we are more readily and more harmoniously ready to drop it. She says, what is the life of such a mortal? And it starts with point one by saying that the human mortal mind makes all things start from the lowest mortal thought. It's where she says that the human mortal mind makes all things start from the lowest instead of from the highest mortal thought. That the formation of immortal minds proceed from the divine source and constantly ascend in infinite being. She puts side by side the mortal and the immortal. The immortal starts from mind and remains in mind. It remains idea. Man never drops down to mortal. It is idea. It's that which mind knows about itself. On the other hand, the mortal is that which starts with the lowest mortal thought and then tries to raise it higher and higher and higher, only to see that finally it falls back on itself and ends where it started, in dust. Second, he shows in human reproduction, embryonic mortal mind develops in the direct line of matter. It doesn't develop in the direct line towards spirit. It isn't so that man starts with matter and then can be educated and educated until it becomes more spiritual and finally melts into the spiritual. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the spirit is spirit. We can't mingle that, and we jolly well are wise if we face it. Then we are not disillusioned when it happens. Third, so-called embryonic mortal mind afterwards produces mortals. He says the formation of mortal men or mortals are the product of an inanimate, unconscious seedling. But it's the product of embryonic mortal mind. It starts with mortal mind and then tries to give it identity and says it grows and grows until finally it takes the shape of a mortal. But it starts with mortal mind. Fourth, mortals then fill themselves with their own beliefs. See, now always when we come to the fourth, it is about theories and dogmas and so on. And here we see very well that a mortal, as soon as he's born, is now filled up with mortal beliefs, with theories, with opinions, and I don't know what. And according to his surroundings, he gets a lot of them or a little of them. And I think this is interesting to see, because the experiment one has made with undeveloped people in undeveloped countries show that if one would take a child out of an undeveloped country, a backward country, where they never grow much further than being children in thought, that if one takes them and puts them in the surrounding of the Western world, that they are jolly well able to grow up just as Western people, with the same intelligence and with the same abilities. It only shows that what she says here, that mortals are filled then with their beliefs. If naturally such a child grows up in an undeveloped country, it just is filled with that structure of consciousness which is around in its neighborhood. And if that is not very high, then it can't grow higher than it is. So we today should know that, because it seems that this is not right what we believe in, that the undeveloped country has first to go through some generations until they are able to be equal to us. It's only a matter of giving them the right surroundings. It isn't born in the embryonic mortal mind that a child of an undeveloped race cannot grow up as we can. It's the filling that he gets, the stuffing that he gets, which makes it. And I think if we would realize that, we would have quite a different attitude to the whole problem of Negroes and undeveloped countries and so on and so on and so on, which seems to be so important today. That man has all the faculties. And if we give to man the necessary surroundings, the necessary warmth, the necessary culture, the necessary love and so on, each can grow up just as the people in the developed country, or in the overdeveloped country, whatever we want to have it. Then, when that mortal is stuffed properly with all sorts of theories, and if you have become a specialist, that's the worst that can happen to somebody today. You know the definition of a specialist? The definition of a specialist is the one who knows an awful lot about very little. And actually what today is necessary is that we know a lot about the whole. And that the whole is more interesting than the little. Because we live in one world, and therefore the whole world is always to be taken into consideration, and therefore only that consciousness, I come again to the mutation of consciousness, only that consciousness which is directed towards integrating all knowledge into one, and cybernetics tries to do that, is really that consciousness which is leading the centuries. It's not the specialist. I would rather like to know a little about everything and the whole, but a lot about very little. It's no use to know an awful lot that nobody knows about a special kind of bugs. I don't know how that can save the world. But that's how they are today. That they are so specialized that the one only knows a lot about the bug and the other about the fly. Whereas we are one world, and that which can bring forward the world is to have a universal consciousness, an integrated consciousness, which can be tolerant enough to take in everything and see how every part in the whole has its function. That is a saving part. Yes, then we come to the fifth point, where she shows that mortals are temporal and return to their native nothingness. She speaks here about human birth, growth, maturity, and decay. This mortal seeming is temporal. Let's be clear that all the mortals are mortal seemings and they are temporal. It never merges into immortal being. Somehow we try to fool ourselves and say, but let's try and merge them into immortal being. But finally, disappears, and immortal man, spiritual and eternal, is found to be the real man. It is here where she quotes that psalm, "As for man, his days are as grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourishes. For the wind passes over it, and it's gone. And the place thereof shall know it no more." What a picture. What a picture of the mortal. How little hope there would be if the mortal would be real, would be the only. So, the sixth point, mortals must awake in God's likeness. Here you have the mutation of consciousness. It's awakening. It's coming into further light, where we can see through the mortal, where we can see through materiality and mortality, therefore where the universe becomes transparent for us. "As for me," from another psalm, "I will behold thy face in righteousness." See the mutation of consciousness. It says, "My consciousness shall be directed to thy righteousness," to mine, to God. "I shall be satisfied when I awake," see another awakening, it's a mutation of consciousness coming out of the dream into brighter consciousness, "when I awake, not in thy likeness, but with thy likeness. I awake with thy likeness. I am just one with the consciousness of God. That's the mutation of consciousness that is taking place. That we are no more trying to get hold of reality through a mortal consciousness, not through the material consciousness, no matter how much it has been educated in material theories. It's the spiritual consciousness that alone can see thy face. Seventh, for with thee is the fountain of life. In thy light, shall we see light. Such as a simple line. What does it mean? Now you have the complete change to subjectivity. In thy light, I shall see light. Now I'm no more transparent for the light. I'm no more that pure window pane through which the light can go. I'm no more that pure metaphysical mind through which the divine mind can shine. Now it's in thy light shall we see light. Now I'm with the light. Now I begin to realize what Jesus meant when he said, I am the light. No more I'm transparent for the light. We like at the beginning to be transparent for the light to shine through us. But later we see we are the light. I am the light of the world. And in thy light I see light. Because the light just doesn't see anything else but light. Mind just doesn't see anything else but mind, capital N. Spirit just doesn't see anything else but spirit. And soul and principle and life and truth and love just doesn't see anything else but what they are themselves. Then I have won the right consciousness. And that's how she ends that first part, which shows how, through the whole first part, we have a great ascension, so to say, out of a physiological mind, or physiological concept of consciousness, purified through reasoning and logic, in the metaphysical realm, until finally in the sixth subject it wakes up to see that all that there is ever going on is God. In the seventh subject seeing that therefore nothing else can go on. And then the whole world is transparent. Then in thy light I shall see light. The word of divine science, which says, how is it in Genesis? The word of divine science says to the darkness upon the face of earth, all is all in all, and the light of ever-present love illumines the universe. I'm sorry to repeat that again, but it makes such an enormous impression on me. To see that the light doesn't reason anymore with darkness. That it doesn't say to darkness, you are nothing. The light just says, I'm light. Full stop.